to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, eighth chapter, text number 7. Yad adhutu mato brahman. Yad adhutu mato brahman. Deharambosya datubi. Deharambosya datubi. Yadrichchaya hetunava. Yadrichchaya hetunava. Bhavanto janate yata. Bhavanto janate yata. Yad adhatu mato brahman. Deharambosya datubi. Yadrichchaya hetunava. Bhavanto janate yata. Yat as it is, adhatu mataha, without being materially constituted, Brahman, O learned Brahmana. Deha, the material body. Arambaha, the beginning of. Asya, of the living being. Dhatubi, by matter. Yadrichaya, without cause. Accidental. Hetuna, due to some cause. Ba, either. Bhavanta, your good self. Janate, as you may know it. Yata, so you inform me. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O learned Brahmana, this is Maharaj Prickett speaking, by the way. O learned Brahmana, the transcendental spirit soul is different from the material body. Does he acquire the body accidentally or by some cause? Will you kindly explain this, for it is known to you? Purport. Maharaj Prickett, being a typical devotee, is not only satisfied by confirming the importance of hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam from the representative of Brahmaji by disciplic succession, but he is still more anxious to establish the philosophical basis of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the science of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and as such, all questions that may arise in the mind of a serious student must be cleared by the statements of the authority. A person on the path of devotional service may inquire from his spiritual master all about the spiritual position of God and the living beings. From the Bhagavad Gita, as well as from the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is known that qualitatively the Lord and the living beings are one. The living being in the conditioned state of material existence is subjected to many transmigrations by continuous changing of the material body. But what are the causes of the material embodiment of the part and parcel of the Lord? Maharaj Prickett inquires about this very important matter for the benefit of all classes of candidates on the path of self-realization and devotional service to the Lord. Indirectly, it is confirmed that the Supreme Being, the Lord, makes no such material changes of the body. He is spiritually whole, with no difference between his body and his soul, unlike the conditioned soul. The liberated living beings who associate with the Lord in person are also exactly like the Lord. Only the conditioned souls awaiting liberation are subject to change of bodies. How was the process first begun? In the process of devotional service, the first step is to take shelter of the spiritual master and then inquire from the spiritual master all about the process. This inquiry is essential for immunity to all kinds of offenses on the path of devotional service. Even if one is fixed in devotional service like Maharaj Prickett, he must still inquire from the realized spiritual master all about this. In other words, the spiritual master must also be well-versed and learned so that he may be able to answer all these inquiries from the devotees. Thus, one who is not well-versed in the authorized scriptures and not able to answer all such relevant inquiries should not pose as a spiritual master for the matter of material gain. It is illegal to become a spiritual master if one is unable to deliver the disciple. Om Agina Temidam Dasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshudun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurudave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadam Ayam Dadati Swapadantikam. So Srila Prabhupada says here in the purport that the first step is to take shelter of a spiritual master, and then one has to inquire from the spiritual master all about the process. This inquiry is essential, etc. And earlier in the purport, Prabhupada says that all such questions that may arise in the mind of a serious student must be cleared by the statements of the authority. So in this class, we're going to, if we have time, we're going to try to talk about proper application of Vanashram Dharma. Should women be gurus within ISKCON? Is the Ritvic philosophy bona fide? And there's one other one. Can chocolate be offered to the deities? No. Don't worry. We're just going to stick to what's here. So this is the first of a series of questions that Maharaj Parikit asks Sukadev Goswami. And it's a whole bunch of them, actually. And Prabhupada, and this, his question gets answered in the first text of the next chapter, 291. And I'll just jump ahead to that just to read you the... And Prabhupada gave a class on this verse in Japan, Tokyo, Japan, September 12, 1972. But this is Sukadev Goswami's answer to the Maharaj Parikit. He says, O King, unless one is influenced by the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no meaning to the relationship of the pure soul and pure consciousness with the material body. That relationship is just like a dreamer's seeing his own body working. But, and he elaborates on that. But the gist of it is that he's asking the cause. Does he acquire the body accidentally or by some cause? Well, the answer is it's by some cause. And Prabhupada explains in the lecture he gave in Tokyo, Japan, September 12, 1972, that the cause was that the living entity, who he clearly states was originally in the spiritual world, wants to be like Krishna. So Krishna makes an arrangement. He creates an illusion so that that living entity can, you know, fulfill that desire, have the opportunity to experience being like Krishna. And it's and that's the cause. That's the cause of the material, getting the material body in the first place, and that's the cause of the repeated birth and death. For as long as the living entity has that desire that he wants to imitate or be like Krishna, then he has to initially come into the material world, accept the material body, and repeatedly get material bodies until he becomes free from that. And the illusion is a powerful one. It's a very powerful... We're not going to talk about a lot about that in this class here because it's something that is also a controversial subject, you know, the fall, the jiva, and so forth and so on. And that's something that only really one properly understands when one becomes advanced, but we'll probably focus on this class about things we could do to become advanced as opposed to what we'll understand when we're advanced. But Prabhupada gives some interesting analogies in that class he gave. He gave one example he gave was when you look at the moon and it's a cloudy day or a cloudy morning and it's windy and you see that if you're looking up at the moon, it looks like the moon is racing through the sky. You know, if you look at it, I've experienced that. But actually the moon is nothing to do with those clouds. You know, those clouds are just about, what, like not even a mile above the Earth's surface. I don't know. I can't remember from high school. I learned about at what height all the different clouds are, but they're not that very high. You know, but the moon is, according to science anyway, it's 250,000, quarter of a million miles away. So, you know, it's an illusion, in other words. That moon's not moving. The moon's just like there, and the clouds are moving. But when you look at it, it looks like, you know, the moon's racing through the sky. So in the same way, we have this illusion that we are these bodies, that this is who we really are. And it's really a very convincing illusion. But it's just that. It's just an illusion. Yeah? Krishna in the seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which I don't have, there's a verse where it mentions how Krishna is the supreme magician. Right? So magicians, they're you know, one of the things, they can create an illusion. If you've ever seen a magic show, they, you know, sometimes magicians can do something like they'll saw somebody in half. But that one's kind of like people know all some of the tricks they use for that. But you might see a magician do something like somebody's sitting there playing the piano, and the magician can get the person to come off the ground, and then he takes something and puts it. I mean, they do incredible things, and everybody's going like, whoa. Krishna is the supreme magician, and he's created this illusion so that we're really thinking, this is what's going on. You know, Prabhupada explains that actually we're just really in the spiritual world, but we're just like dreaming that this is, you know, who we really are. Anyway, so the way to come out of it, I don't know, as I said, I don't want to get into that, but how to come out of the dream. And the way to come out of the dream is one aspect of one practice that's important in the process of coming out of the dream is hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, there's the five angas, was it Panchanga, and of devotional service, and one of them is to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, right? Okay. So now we're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. We do this every day. Today we're hearing, we're in the second canto, chapter 8. We're hearing Maharaj Prickett is inquiring from Sukadev Goswami. And, you know, before that, we were hearing Narada Muni was inquiring from Lord Brahma earlier in this canto. And the canto started off, actually, the first four chapters of this canto was Maharaj Prickett briefly just asked a couple questions to Sukadev Goswami, maybe just one question, right at the beginning of the first chapter of the second canto. And Sukadev Goswami spoke for chapters 1, 2, 3, and 4. So we heard from Sukadev Goswami for the first time, actually, in the Bhagavatam, chapters 1, 2, 3, and 4 of the second canto. But previous to that, we were hearing from so many other amazing personalities. In other words, the Srimad Bhagavatam is like a smorgasbord of transcendental personalities. It's like if you go to an NBA All-Star game or an NBA playoff game. David Retta loves when I relate everything to basketball. But you're going to see the game at its best, you see, when you go to a game like that. So in the same way, when you're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, you're experiencing the Vedic, culture, everything at its best. The topmost personalities, just like the topmost players appear in the All-Star game, or the topmost players, appear in the final round of the playoffs or whatever. The topmost personalities appear in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and we get to have their association. And that's, we really actually are having the opportunity to get their association. There's a purport in, I'll tell us the other way around. Everybody remembers Punyatama, the devotee Punyatama? He was actually a very fired up devotee. In 1978, I was traded for Mother Tita Guna. Mother Tita Guna's Pancharatna's wife and Mother Gunavati, who we all know. I was traded to Australia. They came. They wound up in New York, and I got sent to Australia. The other guy didn't go, and so I spent about 2 or 3 weeks in London. And each day they let me go out with a different Sankirtan devotee on Sankirtan. And by that time, I'd already distributed with some of the best distributors, at least in North America, Surapabu, Tripurari, Pragosh, Vaisheshika, like that, etc. Like Atma. So I'd seen, the top distributors. And Punyatama was like, he was like that. He was a fireball, like a powerful distributor and a very serious sadhaka too. He got messed up. He got tripped up when he at some point here when he came to America. But anyway, he had about a half a dozen realizations. Whenever you'd meet him on the street, he'd always share one of them with you, right? Remember? One of them was I remember hearing this one more than once about how when you're reading the Srimad Bhagavatam, you're getting the association of all these great personalities. Raise your hand if Punyatma ran that one on you. The brahmacharis, people he knew would be interested. So, yeah, he would always say, and he's right. He was right. He's right. And there's a purport in someplace in the first canto. I didn't get a chance to research it, but where Prabhupada says that we'd like to thank Narada Muni, right? Anybody remember this one? We'd like to thank Narada Muni for kindly appearing, what? Fifth chapter. Do you know exactly the verse? To thank Narada Muni for kindly appearing here in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah, so you could take that metaphorically, I guess, but I'd like to take it literally. that Narada Muni he's appeared in the pages of the Bhagavatam. In other words, when you read the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's not different from Krishna. There's, you know, so many verses that say that. But it's also, by the inconceivable potencies of Krishna, it's not different from those personalities. In other words, you're actually getting the association of Narada Muni. You're getting the association of Vyasadeva. Actually, as part of my preparation for this class, I just went through the first canto. Because so far, as I said, in the second canto, we've gotten the association of Maharaj Prickett, and asking the question, Sukadeva Goswami and Lord Brahma and Narada Muni. But in the first canto, there's a whole panel of amazing personalities we're getting the association of. It's actually, the first canto begins with Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva is the person speaking in the very beginning of the first canto, first canto, chapter one, up until, it's Vyasadeva up until, I think, text six, we're hearing from the sages of Naimisharanya initially. You know, the spokesman for the sages of Naimisharanya was Shonakam Rishi, but initially, the way it's presented, more than one time in the translation, it's in the purport, we're hearing from the sages of Naimisharanya, meaning different sages might be posing the questions or like that. But then we're hearing also from, then you hear from Srila Suta Goswami. And one thought that came to my mind when I was doing this little research project last night in preparation for the class was, you know, we memorize a lot of the verses from the first chapter of the Bhagavatam and from the second chapter of the Bhagavatam. Those verses that Vaisheshika Bhu was referring to yesterday about Shrinvatam, Svakata, Krishna, that whole series of verses. It's about four or five verses. That's from the second chapter, Divinity and Divine Service. That's Suta Goswami speaking. See? So in other words, it's not that just, you know, Maharaj Prickett and Sukadeva Goswami, the only two kind of important personalities in the Bhagavatam. I mean, they're all important. They're all like super transcendental devotees, and they all have like a mouthful to say. You know, they're all making an incredible contribution, transcendental contribution to the overall awesomeness of the Bhagavatam. And, you know, so much so that we memorize their verses. You know, we're memorizing things that the sages of Naimisharanya asked in the first chapter, you know, and we're memorizing the answers of Suta Goswami in the second chapter, like that. So anyway, so far you got Vyasadeva, sages of Naimisharanya, Suta Goswami, then Shonaka Rishi chimes in the fifth chapter. Then there's that whole interlude between Vyasadeva and Narada Muni. Actually, it starts off towards the second half of the fourth chapter with Suta Goswami. The sages are inquiring about how did the Bhagavatam come about, and so in answer to their questions, Suta Goswami describes to them all about Vyasadeva and, you know, what he did and how he, you know, in the previous class I kind of went over that whole thing, but so that's all there. And then you know, Narada Muni appears on the scene, and then Narada Muni instructs Vyasadeva in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and then he actually tells him about his own life. And so that's all there. So we're getting, you know, their association. Then in the seventh chapter, we hear more about what Vyasadeva did after he got all that instruction from Narada Muni, how he, you know, prepared himself or entered into the process of producing the Srimad Bhagavatam. Did you find it? More research is needed. Okay, it's there. In the eighth chapter of the Bhagavatam, we hear about... Oh, no, in the seventh chapter, there's also that halfway through the seventh chapter, there's that whole pastime about the punishment of the son of Dronacharya, Ashvatthama. And then, so in the seventh chapter of the Bhagavatam, first canto, we're introduced to Arjuna, Krishna, and Draupadi in that order. Just briefly, you know, they may all, you know, come in, make an appearance, and they all do say something. And then in the next chapter, there's... we're introduced to Uttara, you know, the wife of Abhimanyu, Queen Kunti, in her prayers. And then in the last part of the chapter, Yudhisthira comes in, and he kind of implores Krishna to stay a little bit longer. They need, you know, in Hastinapura, like that. And then the next chapter, Bhishma Dev, you know, this is like, you know, the lineup of the most powerful team or something, you know, like boom, heavy, here's the heavy hitters coming one after the other, you know, Bhishma Dev, who else, Vidura, Sanjaya, then actually, then later on, of course, we also hear about Maharaj Prickett when he encounters Kali. Anyway, you get the idea. It's just like all these incredible, super transcendental personalities are giving us their association in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srimad Bhagavatam is an incredible book. And as I mentioned, one of the angas is to study the Srimad Bhagavatam. And I wanted to make one point on this, that, you know, in previous ages, people had better memories, right? That's stated in the early on in the, I think, the first chapter there. Prayena palyusa sabya kalina smenyu gejana. Yeah, manda sumanda mateo manda banya. So, you know, people had better memories, and they also had more interest. So, you know, so in Kali Yuga, it's quite... So the process was you just heard attentively from your spiritual master, and you would remember. But that kind of, for most of us, that doesn't work. We've got to do more. It's in Kali Yuga, you got to do more than just hear and then expect that you're going to remember. If you are able to do that, you're blessed. Congratulations, you're blessed, and we take the dust from your lotus feet. But for most of us, you got to do more than that. You got to really apply your mind more. Now, there's a reason why in schools, at least all over the United States, and I'm not sure because I haven't researched it, but I would venture to say every place in the world, there's a reason why the kids at school get homework, because they need that to kind of solidify the information in their mind. And that was like you go to school and you hear something in the class, and then your teacher gives you homework, right? And the homework is not the new stuff. The homework is not about what they're going to be teaching the next day. The homework is just reviewing what they taught you that day. If I remember, at least the homework I got was of that nature. And that's, I think, pretty much standard all over the world. There's a reason for that, because people need that in order to be able to remember it. You know, you hear it from the teacher that day in the school, and then a few hours go by, and you go home, and the homework is about the same thing the teacher was just teaching you about. And then if you do the homework, you know, you answer all the questions, you write the paper, whatever you have to do, you know, then you have a better chance of remembering it. All right? So I would like to suggest that we need to study the Bhagavatam like that, you know, because otherwise I need, at least for myself, a lot of it just goes, you know, it just goes in one ear and out the other. I mean, when I was doing this, study, a little project, research last night in preparation for the class, I joined the movement middle of April 1973. That's over 48 years ago. Okay, so I've been hearing and coming to class all the time. So you might think, oh, that was easy. You know, you could have done that by memory, but I couldn't. I couldn't do it by memory. In other words, I wasn't, even though I've been hearing the Bhagavatam, I've been, you know, and reading it and everything for 48 years, I wasn't able to just sit down and just, you know, from my memory, remember, okay, yeah, first there was this person speaking, and then they spoke to that person, and then there was this. I couldn't. I had to sit down behind the computer on the Veda base and just, you know, do it, look at it, and then make notes and everything like that. See, so in other words, so, as I said, somebody with a better memory, hopefully some of you have, might be able to just do that off the top of your head. But for a lot of us, you need to study. You need to study. That's the Kali Yuga equivalent to, you know, hearing attentively with rapt attention from the spiritual master. We want to try to do that too, but in addition, we might need to study. It's a good idea to, you know, go back, take any way it's going to work for you, but so you can get the ideas in your head. Now, somebody might think a response to that might be, well, you know, hey, I thought I heard it said that there's no qualification. You know, you don't have to be a scholar, you don't have to be rich, you don't have to be this. It's true. There's no material impediment. Even if you're not like a scholar, you can still become a pure devotee. But there's nothing wrong with being a scholar. I mean, it's not like it's you have to be. You could be illiterate, right? I mean, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji is given as an example. Of course, he wasn't really illiterate, but he didn't write very well, you know. But the point is, it's okay. It's not like it's a bad thing. You know, this might not be absolutely necessary. It isn't absolutely necessary. You could become a pure devotee and empowered even without reading the books. I mean, I've heard Prabhupada say that. You could just, if somebody could chant the Hare Krishna mantra without offense, they'll experience love of Godhead, which is the ultimate goal of the chanting. But, you know, if you have that inclination, or if you have that ability and inclination, it's a good idea to use the things we're already conditioned. We're already, like, we all went through school, so we all have to do that. You know, that whole thing of, like, going and getting homework and studying. Might as well use that in Krishna service. You know? And of course, and that, this is not like, some new brilliant eye. It's already going on. You know, you have the Vrindavan Institute for Higher Education, Mayapur Institute for Higher Education, where they give the devotees an opportunity to systematically study the literature. That's a good idea, because it'll just help you get more absorbed in it like that. So that's a point. And as I said, and how to do it, there's already programs, mechanisms in place, programs in place for that purpose, but you can figure it out for yourself too. You know, that's also bona fide. Now another point is, so this Srimad Bhagavatam, it's got everything going for it. You know, the Srimad Bhagavatam. So as I mentioned, we're hearing from all these, we're getting the association of all these incredible transcendental personalities. If we get absorbed in it, it's going to really helps us a lot in our own spiritual life. And aside from that, it's beautiful. Look at this book. This is a beautiful book. I mean, I don't know about anybody else, but for me, looking at this is like, I go every day, I see the Bhagavatam and I go, wow, that is beautiful. Like, I love. Prabhupada was really the original designer or artist of the cover. Archer did a good job of kind of getting it onto this volume that we distribute now. But, you know, I mean, Krishna says in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Yayatam Mampapajante Tam Sativa Bhajamiham, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So I noticed the pujaris when they, in the morning, you know, when it's greeting the deities, they're all kind of, they cluster together, and I could see them all kind of standing next to each other and going like that, and they're really getting into how they, you know, how beautiful the deities look. I don't have that. You know, I mean, I could see. Deities look beautiful. But I don't really. But when I look at the Bhagavatam, then even though it's dressed the same every day, they don't change the outfit. Same outfit. This book has been wearing the same outfit for the last 20 years now. But it's beautiful. This is a beautiful cover. I mean, you know, even if you don't know anything about what it means or anything, it's a beautiful cover. Look at that. Okay, that's one point. Yeah. Now, aside from that, but it does mean something. This picture is not just like some, you know, silly picture. This is a cosmology. This is a cosmological picture, and I'll explain what I mean by that. It's a picture of reality. Cosmology, the dictionary definition of the word is, it's the study of the origin and the development of the universe. And that's exactly what this picture is. This is an amazing picture. This picture is a picture that describes the origin and the development of the universe. And if you don't get it, and the devotees get it just by looking at it, but then there's a couple pages in, there's the explanation of the cover. You know, somebody could become a pure devotee just by looking at this book and reading that explanation of the cover. Well, I don't know about a pure devotee, but you can get a lot of inspiration from that. This is an amazing book. And aside from that, it's real easy to read. I mean, if I was in a situation where I got the opportunity to give a book, one book, to some really important person, like whoever, you know, Xi Jinping, where is this? Gyanga Prime here? No. Okay, or anybody, you know. Vladimir Putin or Joe Biden or whatever. You know, if I had an opportunity to give some really important person one book, I definitely would give him this first, the Canto Bhagavatam. This is the book I would give him. Even more so than Bhagavad Gita. It's a real, first of all, it's a lot more beautiful. No offense, Bhagavad Gita, but it's beautiful to see, and it's got a storyline. It's an easy read. You know, you could tell them just, okay, you know, to start off with, maybe just read the translations. And it's got an interesting storyline there. So This is an amazing book. It's an amazing book to... Bhagavatam is amazing to study, and it's amazing to distribute. When you give somebody a Srimad Bhagavatam, when you're out there on Sankirtan, and you give somebody a Srimad Bhagavatam, you are giving them a game changer. This book is a game changer. This is a book that can... Yeah. This is a book that can change somebody's life for real. Big time. You know? And we want to do that. You know, we want to do that. We want to, as much as possible, get out there and get these books out. And, you know, by the mercy of the management of this temple, we've been given, all of us, we've been given a great opportunity to do that. You know, by Krishna's mercy, so many different wonderful arrangements are here in New Dwarka. And we're in a position to really give Krishna consciousness to a lot of people, you know, distribute it very liberally, reach a lot of people. And people need it. I'll give you an example. This is one example, because, you know, Prabhupada said if you're cooking a pot of rice, if you just take one grain, then you can tell something about if the pot, what's going on with the pot, if it's all cooked or not. So this was just yesterday. But this is, as I said, this is just one incident of like many, many, many that I have, and I'm sure other distributors have. I was in the Target parking lot over there on La Cienega and Obama, that Target, okay? And so I approached this one lady. Probably looks like she's about 40 or something like that, 45. And so I show her the books, and she wasn't interested herself, but she goes, you know what? Maybe I should take these for my son. I said, yeah, great idea, take them for your son. And then she described to me her son's situation. She said he was 23 years old, and she said since COVID began, you know, he wasn't working, so he was just sitting in his room. He said she was getting into drinking, and he was watching. And all he did was drink and watch video games. You know, so you hear that a lot. I mean, right? Sankirtan devotees, you know, don't you? There's a lot of people out there, and I bet you if I met him, he was probably a cool guy, you know? But it's just like a victim of circumstances. There's so many people out there. They really need to come in contact with Krishna consciousness and have the opportunity to, you know, to do something perfect with their lives, which is take up devotional service. So, yeah, we're reaching people like that. There's people maybe who aren't interested or just like absorbed in the dream of enjoying the material world, but there's plenty of people who aren't. There's plenty of people who are ripe. You know, and Vaisheshik in one class, he hasn't mentioned it for some years now, but his strategy was approach, we're going out there to get the ripe fruit, you know, the ripe fruit. So that's a way not to get discouraged. Just don't worry about the people who aren't ripe yet or rotten, you know. Just you think of yourself as a fruit picker. Actually, I was a fruit picker before I joined, I lived in a kibbutz in Israel for some months, and my service was to pick grapefruit, and that's what they taught me. That's how they taught me just that. That when you used to climb up the tree, and they'd say, "Look, you take the thing, and if you're just going to give it a little tug, and if it comes off, that's what we want. Don't touch the ones on the ground, because you have to put them in the basket. And if it's a bit of a struggle, just leave it." Leave it. We'll get it next week. We'll get it, you know, we'll get it next. Just take the ones that just come off. So it's exactly perfect strategy, you know, perfect analogy. We're just going for the ripe fruit. You know, the ones that aren't ripe, leave them on the vine, leave them on the tree to ripen up. And the ones that have already hit the ground, next lifetime, you know. So anyway, I'll stop there. Does anybody have anything they'd like to say? Thank you. Hare Krishna. Sure.
Yeah, I wanted to share something from the Chaitanya Charitamrita in glorification of the Srimad Bhagavatam in relationship to getting a taste for chanting Hare Krishna.
Okay.
One can overcome all misconceptions and entanglement in the material world by practicing bhakti yoga. And therefore, Vyasadeva, acting on the instruction of Sri Narada Muni, has very kindly introduced Srimad Bhagavatam to relieve the conditioned souls from the clutches of Maya. Lord Chaitanya's spiritual master instructed him, therefore, that one must read Srimad Bhagavatam regularly and with scrutiny to gradually become attached to chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila 773 purport.
Thank you. I was asked to say something about Vakeshwara Pandit, so very briefly. Vakeshwara Pandit is related to Aniruddha. I think he's like an expansion. If I'm wrong, correct me. An expansion of Aniruddha. He's one of the intimate associates of Lord Chaitanya, and he was famous for his dancing, among other things. Actually, he also was the person who saved Devananda Pandit, right? Yeah, Devananda Pandit was an offender, and he was saved by his association with Vakeshwara Pandit. But Vakeshwara Pandit was, among other things, famous for his dancing. On one occasion, he danced for 72 hours continuously to get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, which he did. It's kind of like watching Devaratta dance, but 10 times, you know. So he was a very empowered, confidential devotee of Lord Chaitanya. So somebody else, you want to say something? Yeah.
Okay. When we read Srimad Bhagavatam, we have association with, this great personality. So can you maybe elaborate a little bit how it really work, this kind of association? Did we, there maybe even, mystically, they're aware, about us in some sense? Or is it just, they're just our role model, and we try to just follow their example? But yeah. Can you say a little bit more about
Well, my honest answer to that question is, I don't know. But just like I'm in this room now, and there's like, say, this looks like there's about 22 dozen people in the room, okay? But you're not all the same. I know that I can make out a difference between Amala Bhakta Maharaj, Prema Sankirtan, Devaratta, Satchidanoy, and other, et cetera. So my speculation, philosophical speculation, I hope, would be that as we get, go more and more deeply into the Bhagavatam, you'll actually be able to experience the personality. Narada is a personality. He's not the same as Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva is a different personality from Vidura. Vidura is a different personality from Queen Kunti. Queen Kunti is a different personality from Draupadi, et cetera, et cetera. And as you go more and more deeply into it, you'll actually, once again, this is a philosophical speculation, that you'll experience these personalities. Otherwise, what would it mean to get the association of that? It's more than just getting some information. I'm thinking that you get the actually experience of that personality. But once again, somebody who maybe knew more could say something better about that. Yeah, another good time.
Okay.
This is the last thing,
and then
we'll
stop.
Real
quick, because I think we're over time. I like the point you were making, how we could develop a relationship with the people in the Bhagavatam. Yeah. Yeah. How we can develop a relationship with the different people in the Bhagavatam. And I was thinking, when we sing the Prema Dwani prayers, Jaya Vishnupad Paramahamsa, we're actually glorifying so many different people, if you think about that. It's like the different acharyas, Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta, the six Goswamis, Radha Krishna, the Gopis, Radha Kun, Shamakun. We have like an infinite list of people, because then we pay obeisances to the Vaishnavas, and the Vaishnavas are unlimited. There's Vaishnavas in Vaikuntha and Dwarka and Goloka all over this material cosmos. So we're basically paying obeisances to everyone, because everybody at heart is a devotee. Even if you're in the material world, you're covered over. So I thought that was a nice point. in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, in other words, the spiritual master must also be well-versed and learned so that he may be able to answer all these inquiries from the devotees. And then he was explaining how, you go to the spiritual master and you inquire, and that's how you get the answers. But even Srila Prabhupada, this is also a common phenomenon nowadays, but even when Srila Prabhupada was on the planet, he had so many disciples that never met him, even physically. They got initiation through the mail or whatever, so they may have never had the chance to ask a question. Of course, he was available, like he would answer any letters that came to him, but perhaps some people were nervous. They didn't want to bother Srila Prabhupada by their questions.
Mm-hmm.
So is it appropriate that you should go to a senior devotee for questions? And if that is appropriate, then how do you differentiate? Because you may be inspired by different senior devotees, and you may take inspiration from their answers, but they may have different answers. They may answer your question differently. Say, I ask you,
And then I ask Vaisheshika Prabhu, and then I ask like another senior devotee the same question. You guys might give good answers, but it may all be different. So then what answer am I supposed to actually like follow if I'm looking for an instruction? And I have found that some of my questions, I have some like philosophical questions that I've asked senior devotees, and I've yet to be like satisfied with like an answer. So is Krishna also available? Should we go to the deity and, you know, I've heard a quote where Srila Prabhupada says, if you chant Hare Krishna, all your questions will be answered. So that's there also. So can you?
Well, that's a big question.
Can you guide me?
I'll just say teeny little bit in answer to that. I would say try to ask your question to somebody who you is recognized as being very authorized devotee. You know, that's one point. And the GBC might have a position on the you know the point that you're inquiring about. Find out what that is, because you know that's supposed to be the official understanding that we get on certain issues. You know, the GBC issues position papers and explaining it, like to say the fall of the jiva, something like that. So you know you could ask different devotees, but the most intelligent thing to do would be, what does the GBC have to say on this issue? Because they've written on it. They've expounded on it like that. And then the other thing is read Prabhupada's books carefully, because pretty much everything's in Prabhupada's books. You know, if we really, you know, really research what we're concerned about in Prabhupada's books, we might find the answer there. And, you know, might find it's not necessary to ask this one, that one. And last thing is sometimes you just have to be patient. Sometimes it's just sometimes you're not going to understand it until you become more advanced. You just have to take the answer that's there, and even though you're not feeling it, but it's the right answer, and you just, when you become more advanced, you'll be able to appreciate it more. So we really have to stop there because it's late. Thank you. Kuntarat Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Is it okay? Is that okay?